Welcome to the James River Church podcast. You're about to hear another inspirational message from Pastor John Lindell. It's our prayer that this message is an encouragement and blessing to your life.
This morning we come to Mark chapter 7. Mark chapter 7. The message, appropriately enough, is entitled Great Faith, and it involves a mother of all things on Mother's Day. And what's interesting really is, just so you know, you say, boy, you must have been planning this out months in advance. No, you know what? I really realized it fell on Mother's Day last Sunday. When I was looking, I was like, oh my goodness, that's going to be the Mother's Day message. So, you know, people ask me about my long-range planning skills. My long-term goal on Monday is to have a good message on Sunday. By Friday and Saturday, it's a short-term goal. So, anyway, the Lord going before us, we come to this amazing story that is recorded for us here in Mark 7, and also you'll find in Matthew chapter 15, and we'll be looking at both passages because together they give us an incredible story. When you come to Mark chapter 7, just to set the stage, it's been a very, very busy time in the life of our Savior. He's at the peak of his popularity. The crowds throng him. Everywhere he goes, there is an instant crowd. He wants to get a break. He sends the disciples out two by two. They come back. They're rejoicing over what has happened. And he gets word right about that time about his cousin, John the Baptist, being beheaded. So he no doubt is grieving over that. He's also wanting to debrief with his 12 disciples. And so he seeks to get away, but as they try to get away, the crowd runs ahead of them. And as they get off of the boat, there's a crowd of 5,000 men besides women and children. The Bible tells us he teaches them, he heals them, and at the end of the day, he feeds a crowd of what scholars estimate would be somewhere around 15,000 to 20,000 people. He sends them away, sends the disciples away. He goes up on the mountain to pray. He comes down from the mountain. He walks on water, you'll remember, and comes to the disciples. And immediately when he steps into the boat, the boat now is at a different place on the Sea of Galilee, and the crowds are there again. So many people that the Bible says he doesn't even have time to eat. So now, He really needs rest. His disciples need rest. And we come to Mark chapter 7 and verse 24. Let's look at it. And from there he arose and went away to the region of Tyre and Sidon. And he entered a house and did not want anyone to know, yet he could not be hidden. So this is the only time that our Lord really goes outside of the boundaries of Israel. In fact, I'm going to show you on a map here. What you have is most of his ministries happening right there around the Sea of Galilee, Tyre and Sidon up there. The woman we're going to meet, one gospel calls her a Syrophoenician woman. Syria is over here. It controls Phoenicia, hence the name Syrophoenician woman. So he's up in this region. He's away from the crowds. He's seeking some rest, but he cannot be hidden. I don't know, have you ever gone, planned like a vacation, and you wanted to get away, and you tried to get away, and then like if you're a business owner, or you have, you know, family, and all of a sudden it's like you can't get away. There's things that come up, and the rest that you'd hope for is not the rest that you end up getting. If you've ever had that feeling, then you know exactly how Jesus feels with his disciples. But he's there not only to get a break, but he's there as well on divine appointment. And I couldn't help as I read this, but think of many of you getting ready to head out on vacation over the next 2 or 3 months, wanting to get away from it all. I want to challenge you that in the midst of your break, a break from your regular routine is not necessarily a break from ministry. That as you're away from the regular appointments of life, that God may very well have divine appointments, people that he brings to you because he wants to do something in their life through you by his power. And it'll make your vacation so much more wonderful if you're open to doing that, to reaching out to people. And Jesus, as he's seeking to get away, meets a woman with a big need, but she has even bigger faith. She has great faith, mega faith. It's interesting that in the Bible, in the gospel record, there are only two people that Jesus commends for having great faith. It's a Roman centurion, and it is this woman. To the disciples, he is constantly, as he watches them, he's constantly taken back by their lack of faith. In fact, on five different occasions, he chides them for their little faith. In Matthew chapter 6 and verse 30, he says, "If God so clothes the grass of the field, which today is alive and tomorrow is thrown into the oven, will he not much more clothe you, O you of little faith?" In other words, Jesus is calling every single one of us to trust him to meet the basic needs of our life. That he's calling us to say, "I believe you love me enough to take care of me." He says again to them in Matthew 8 and verse 26, "Why are you afraid, O you of little faith?" And he rose and rebuked the winds and the sea, and there was a great calm. He's calling us to trust him in the storms of life. That he's a powerful enough God to calm the wind and the waves. That he's able to calm the storms of our life. You see again in Matthew chapter 14 and verse 31, Jesus immediately reached out his hand, took hold of him, saying, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" Remember, that's as Peter is starting to sink. He's asked Jesus to let him walk on water, and now he gets his eyes on the wind and the waves. He's looking at his circumstances, and he's more focused on what's happening around him than he is on the Savior who loves him and is working in his life. Whenever we get our eyes on circumstances more than on our Savior, his word to us is going to be, "Oh, you of little faith, can't you trust me?" He wants us to trust him. And then in Matthew chapter 16 and verse 8, but Jesus, aware of this, because the disciples are wondering, they're arguing among themselves because nobody has any bread. And you know, so they're saying to one another, Peter's saying to John, "Did you get the bread?" "No, I thought Andrew had it." And Andrew's saying, "Hey, that's not my job. That's Philip's job." And Philip's saying, "You know, come on, Thomas, I thought you'd take care of it." Thomas is saying, "I told you I doubt I could, but you know, I mean," they're going back and forth, and he's saying, "Oh, you have little faith. Didn't you just see me feed the 5,000 and then see me feed the 4,000? And you're wondering about my ability to provide?" Listen, can I just say what Jesus admires, what really captures his attention is when you and I have great faith. When we believe he's the God who not only can do the impossible, but will do the impossible. He loves that. He admires that. That gets his attention. And that's why this woman's story is recorded for us twice in the gospel record. She's a woman of great faith. And so what I want to do in the next few moments is I want to give you five marks of great faith. It's a great story, and I hope you're taking notes, that you'll write them down. And then I hope that you'll think about them relative to your own situation, the circumstances of your life, what you need, where you're at, what you're going through, that you give some thought to what God is asking you to do relative to believing him for a miracle in your situation. Number one, a person with great faith brings their problems to Jesus. A person with great faith brings their problems to Jesus. Look at it in Mark chapter 7 and verse 25. But immediately a woman whose little daughter had an unclean spirit, that's a demon, she's demonized. And when the word unclean appears, often Many scholars believe that that is a reference to unclean in the sense of the possession, the person being demonized manifests degrading, sensual, defiling type of behavior, which may be the case here. We don't know for sure. She had an unclean spirit. The little daughter did. The woman had heard of him and came and fell down at his feet. So here's a lady, she's got a daughter who's demonized. In fact, if you go over to Matthew chapter 15, and verse 22 gives us a little more information. In fact, go to Matthew because we're going to be in Matthew for just a little bit looking at the story, and then we'll go back to Mark. But when you look at Matthew, it says, "And behold, a Canaanite woman from that region came out and was crying." She's screaming. She's shrieking. The word in the Greek, kratzo, it's a loud cry. And what is she crying? "Have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David." We don't know what all she knows about Jesus, but she knows enough to know that he's healed people, and she knows enough about a messianic title, to use it of Jesus, to call him a Son of David. She says, "My daughter is severely oppressed by a demon." Severely oppressed. I mean, I want us to just for a moment, sometimes we read those things and we don't stop and think about what's going on there. I mean, stop and just imagine for a moment, enter into the reality of that, the heartbreak, the sorrow of that. This little girl is demonized. Maybe a way to understand that is to take everything we read of the Gadarene demoniac in Mark chapter 5 and transpose it onto her life. Maybe she's involved in self-harm, self-mutilation, shrieking out, crying out, up all hours of the night, wailing, screaming, trying to cut herself, maybe possibly trying to kill her mother. Maybe unwilling in that society, which would be just horrible, unwilling to keep clothes on. Maybe the demon trying to throw her, like we're going to read in Mark chapter 9, throw her into the fire to kill her. Maybe going into some kind of seizures. I mean, everything about the Gadarene demoniac probably you could say is true of this little girl. It's a severe case of demonic torment. And this woman does what you and I need to do whenever we're facing a problem, is we need to go to Jesus. Moms, can I just say this? Bring your children to Jesus. Maybe the most important thing you can do, or that you will ever do, is to bring your kids to Jesus. With their problems, with their needs, come to Jesus. Come with the kind of faith that says, "I believe you're a God of miracles and that you'll do miracles, and that when I'm at my wit's end as a parent, then God, you have an answer, you have a solution, and you can do what doctors can't do, and you can do what psychologists can't do, and you can do what teachers can't do, and you can do what I can't do, and you can heal my child." I mean, as I think about this past week, I think about my own mom and think about what she did in the life of the lives of her six children. She literally prayed them into the kingdom. I mean, she brought us to Jesus. I found out later, actually, it was when I'd already started pastoring James River, a woman who had been a part of the church during the time that I was attending there and my family was a part of the church, told me, she said, "You know, your mother came to me." She was just saying how wonderful it was I was a pastor. She said, "You know, it's just amazing. You don't really realize the miracle of it because," and I did more than she knows. But she said, "Your mother came to me and confided in me. I don't know what I'm going to do with John." I was number 5 of 6. She says, I'm afraid he's going to wind up in prison. Doesn't that make you feel good? Because if there was trouble, I was in the middle of it. I mean, I was in the principal's office every year of my school career. I mean, I was in trouble. I mean, when a teacher at the start of the school year, when they gave the rules, those were merely options not previously considered. I mean, it was like, really, a person could do that, you know? And so it's just kind of how I rolled. Whenever there was trouble, I mean, they would just look across, it's kind of like the lineup, they'd get us all together, and the needle always stopped. I was always the person pulled out of the lineup. I was the one who committed the crime. But my mom prayed. My mom brought me to Jesus. She brought Jesus to me. I mean, of the six kids in our family, to my knowledge, though she did a little bit with my brother, and he probably needed as much as I did, but she read me a Bible story every night for years and prayed with me. I mean, she just knew. That's his only hope. I mean, she knew it. She brought me to Jesus. And I just feel like on this Mother's Day, there's some of you and you don't know what to do. You don't know what to do with that son. You don't know what to do with that daughter. Yeah, it may not be a discipline issue. It may be another issue. But you're at your wit's end and you're saying, what do I do? And I'm saying, bring your child to Jesus. And when you bring that son or that daughter, have the faith to believe that Jesus is the one who solves problems supernaturally. A person with great faith brings their problems to Jesus. Second, a person with great faith is persistent in asking for Jesus' help. When you have great faith, you don't quit. When you have great faith, you keep on asking and 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 keep on asking until you've got what you sought. Watch this. Amazing. Verse 23, Matthew 15. But he did not answer her a word. This is interesting. Ever been there? Where you were pleading, where you were begging with tears, you cried out to God as much as you knew possibly how to do it. It was the best you could do, and you cried out to God and you called out to him, and you did it one day and another day and one week and another week, but no answer. I mean, this woman is crying out to him and he says nothing. Heaven's silent. What do you do when that happens? Do you quit? You say, well, you know, I guess God's not going to help me on this one. I guess I'm going to have to figure it out. Or I guess God's not interested. Or I guess prayer doesn't work. Or I guess God helps other people, but he's not going to help me. Listen, I mean, she's not one of the disciples. This lady is about as far off the reservation as you can get. She's not Jewish. She's a Canaanite. She's out of the boundaries of Israel, and she's begging. She's fallen on her face at the feet of Jesus, and she's crying. And he doesn't say anything. Verse 23. But he did not answer her a word. And his disciples came and begged him, saying, send her away, for she is crying out after us. Jesus, she's driving us nuts. Get rid of her. You're not going to help her. It's obvious. If you're going to help her, you would have helped her, but you're not going to help her. So come on, just tell her to leave, or on the count of three, let's all run. Let's get out of here. I mean, apparently what you gather from this goes on for quite a while because it's really wearing on the disciples. And the disciples have had it up to here and they're like, come on, you're not going to help her. It's obvious you're not going to help her. You're not interested in solving this particular situation. Tell her to leave. Just tell her you're not going to do it. And let's move on because she is wearing us out. And all the while she's hearing them say this, she's saying, help me. Help me, help me, help me, help me. She's in essence saying, I am not going to stop asking until you help me. You say, is that really how it works? I mean, is that the way prayer is? In a word, yes. There are times when what you and I need from the Lord will only come through the persistence of prayer that says, I won't let go till you give me what I need from you because only you can help me. Jesus teaches this in Luke chapter 11. He's given him the Lord's Prayer. After he gives him the Lord's Prayer, he says to them this in Luke chapter 11 and verse 5, he said to them, suppose one of you has a friend. So in other words, and let me just say this, the Lord's Prayer is beautiful. It is not so much a model prayer as it is a model of prayer, and it gives us some of the components that as we go to God that should be on our heart and on our mind. Namely, it's always our, it's the community, it's not just me, although we can go to him for our needs. But then after he gives that prayer, watch what he says. He said to them, suppose one of you has a friend and goes to him at midnight and says to him, friend, lend me 3 loaves. For a friend of mine has come to me from a journey and I have nothing to set before him. And from inside he answers and says, do not bother me. The door's already been shut. My children and I are in bed. I cannot get up and give you anything. So he's in a one-room house. You know, everybody's in bed. You know how it goes if you've got young kids. You're like, the last thing you want is somebody waking the kids up in the middle of the night. And he's got this friend knocking on the window saying, hey, get up, I've had guests come in the middle of the night, I've got to give them some food, I don't have any, I know you do. And the guy in bed says, I can't get up and don't you dare wake up the kids or you're for sure not getting anything. Jesus says, I tell you, even though he'll not get up and give him anything because he's his friend, yet because of his persistence, he will get up and give him as much as he needs. So what's the moral of the story? Jesus says, so I say to you, ask and it will be given you, seek and you'll find, knock and it'll be opened to you. For everyone who asks constantly, persistently, you go, you pray God's will into existence. You pray and don't stop. So you came forward one time in the altar. Praise God, that's a start. But don't stop till you get what you need from him, what only he can do for you. Look at this. Everyone who asks receives. He who seeks finds. To him who knocks, it will be opened. Again, Luke chapter 18. Just to give you an idea, this is big in Jesus' mind relative to prayer. One day Jesus told his disciples a story to show that they should always pray and never give up. Can I just say some of you have quit way too soon? You concluded it wasn't God's will or God didn't care or he wouldn't, but it had nothing to do with that. It had everything to do with you stopped praying. There was a judge in a certain city and he neither feared God nor cared about people, and a widow of that city came to him repeatedly saying, give me justice in this dispute with my enemy. And the judge ignored her for a while, but finally he said to himself, I don't fear God or care about people, but this woman is bugging me. I'm going to see she gets justice because she's wearing me out. Then the Lord said, learn a lesson from the unjust judge. Even he rendered a just decision in the end. So don't you think God will surely give justice to his chosen people who cry out to him day and night? Will he keep putting them off? What's the answer? Impossible. Great faith prays, it lays hold of God and says, I will not let go till you bless me. This woman's persistent. Much to the disciples' dismay, she is not going anywhere. That leads us to a third thing. A person with great faith believes God will make an exception for them. Because what is it, frankly, that stops a lot of people? Well, I know so-and-so, and they prayed, and that person died. Don't you love that? I mean, I was at the hospital and listened to one nurse sharing one disaster story after another with the patient. I was thinking, oh, heaven help us. Faith! Let's just talk faith for a minute instead of all the disasters. But, you know, that's what stops a lot of people. They didn't get it. I know sometimes it just doesn't happen. Listen, great faith believes that if necessary, God will make an exception. Great faith believes that. I mean, it believes that God will do things because he's God. Verse 24, he answered, I was sent only to the lost sheep of the house of Israel. So the first words out of his mouth are, I'm right now helping Jewish people. Sorry. You say, that's Jesus. Now, if this offends you, you probably need to be offended more, but it didn't offend her. I mean, so if you're getting your feathers ruffled up and saying, well, that's how he is, and that's the problem maybe for you. You're too easily offended. You're offended because God didn't answer the first time out. You're offended because God didn't do something you thought should have happened somewhere, someplace, somehow. And that offense is going to keep you from experiencing the extraordinary and the supernatural in your life by way of God working miraculously. Better to not be quite so offended. Better to let God be God. Better to quit trying to figure God out and just ask God and depend on him for the miracle and believe if necessary, he'll make an exception for you. You say, well, okay, fair enough. Why is Jesus saying this? Well, because the gospel was to the Jew first. I mean, it had to start somewhere. Jesus was Jewish. The disciples were Jewish. Paul was Jewish. The gospel came to the Jews first, then to the Gentiles. God's will was that Israel would be the light that would shine the gospel around the world. And that is exactly what's happened through the glory of Jesus Christ and the disciples as they've carried the gospel now to us who are Gentiles, right? Paul makes much of this in Romans as he gives the gospel according to Paul, you might call it. And he says, for I'm not ashamed of the gospel, for it is the power of God for salvation to everyone who believes. To the Jew first, it came to the Jews first. Then to the Gentiles. It's not that it's not for Gentiles, it's just, it's got to start somewhere, and it starts with Jewish people. And Jesus simply says to her, listen, I was sent to Israel, to the lost sheep of Israel. In essence, he's saying it's not your turn yet. You say, what's going on here? Let me just say this. He's drawing out of her a faith that will deliver her daughter and will instruct millions of people. Are you okay with that? If God uses your situation to strengthen your faith through the testing of your faith and the testimony that will instruct others to look to him. Is that okay? His delay is not a denial. His saying not now doesn't mean not ever. He's simply working to draw out of her the faith that he knows is in her. So he says to her, it's not your turn yet. Verse 25, but she came and knelt before him saying, Lord, help me. Maybe you felt because you hadn't got your answer, you weren't going to get your answer. At this point, she faces a choice. She can say, well, I don't know what to do, but the answer is not with him. If you're not going to help me, then I'm going to have to go somewhere else. I'm going to have to go to the pagan temple. I'm going to have to, whatever it is, wherever she's going to go. But Jesus says, not yet. And she says, fine, I'm not going anywhere. He says, not now. And she says, okay, I've got time. Your time's my time. My time's your time. Some of you have quit way too soon. I don't say that to condemn you. I say it to encourage you. You stopped, but you got to pick yourself up and start going. You thought he wouldn't, but the fact of the matter is he's brought you here today to remind you that he will. If you'll just wait on him. He wants to show himself powerful. He wants to do something in your life that when people hear about it, they're like, wow! He wants you to come to a place of faith that believes he's the God who does the impossible. And even if there's been a delay, that doesn't mean he's not going to do it. The answer is on its way. He's the God who answers prayer. Number four, a person with great faith is humble in approaching God. It's a beautiful humility here. In verse 25, we read it. She knelt before him. The word there, proskuneo in the Greek, it's worship. It's translated as worship in other places. She worships him. He said, you know what? It's not your turn. She says, fine, I'll just worship you. And the disciples have to be thinking, excuse me, did you not get it? He said no. And she's saying, he didn't say no. He just said, not yet. I'm worshiping. Do you have that kind of faith that says, God, I'm going to worship you, and I'm going to be close to you, and I'm going to be with you until I receive from you what only you can do? It's great faith. I love her prayer. It's very, very simple. We err if we make prayer and faith complicated. You know, some of you, as I'm talking about this, you're sitting there and you're like the commercial for all the meds. You know, like it tells you how this is going to help you be suddenly wonderfully healthy, but then it, you know, it's going to cause, you know, diarrhea and headaches and vomiting and swollen. I mean, and they talk real fast. And some of you are writing that right now. You're like, well, blah, 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 blah. I'm going to tell my life group about that. Don't you dare. Shut your mouth. If you can't speak words of faith, then don't speak at all. Today is not the time to chase every theological rabbit trail on the what ifs and how comes and the why nots and diminish people's faith. Don't you dare. For one time, stand with the people and say, I'm with you. I'm going to believe God for a miracle in your life. She says, Lord, help me. What more do you need to say than that? You don't need to make it complicated. You don't need to worry about if it sounds right. Just ask him to help you. He knows where you're at. He knows what you're going through. He knows the desperation of your situation. Just kneel before him and ask him to help you. I'm sorry if my emotion is a bit overwhelming to you, but I feel this so strongly in my heart that God wants to show himself powerful. That we're watching God do amazing things. We're watching God work in powerful ways, and he's a God who wants to work powerfully for you. You just need to be encouraged today regarding what happens when you believe him for impossible things. Well, back to Mark 7:27. If I could grab a Kleenex from somebody there. Thank you. Mark 7 and verse 27. And he said to her, "Let the children be fed first. For it's not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs." You're like, makes me uncomfortable. Again, let me just say this, that takes you back. Didn't take her back. Don't carry somebody else's offense. Don't get offended at him. She wasn't. You know, he relates different ways to different people. I find this so interesting because right after this, he meets a man who is deaf and mute. And he just heals him. He sighs and heals him. It's amazing. I mean, he just does it. So he may meet your need in one way, meet another person's need in another way, but he's still the God who meets needs, right? So again, he's drawing her out. He's drawing her faith out. She's not, I mean, some people have tried to say, well, you know what he's talking about is puppies, and who doesn't love puppies, and he's calling her a puppy. No, he's not. He's saying you're not a child. You're a Gentile. And right now I'm ministering to the children of the house of Israel, and you're outside that. But she answered him. Here's her response. He says, it's not right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. She answered him, yes, Lord. That's right. I get it. I don't understand it. You know what Jesus is saying? Jesus is saying you don't deserve this. You don't deserve the miracle. If you're having a face-to-face with Jesus and you're asking him to help you and it's not for you, it's for somebody else, and it's really desperate, and Jesus looks at you and says, you don't deserve it. What are you going to say?
Well, can't believe that. That Jesus would say somebody doesn't deserve.
She's like, you're right. You got me there. I don't deserve it. Can I just tell you that's the gospel? He did what we never deserved. And as long as you think you deserve the gospel, you'll never get the gospel. You'll never receive the gospel. You'll never be saved. Well, if you think you deserve to be saved, forget it. You'll never be saved. If you think you don't deserve to be saved, then, oh my goodness, heaven is opened up to you. You know, it's kind of like the way to understand that is, you know, every now and then it's Mother's Day, so guys, you owe your wife a chick flick. I mean, sit there, watch it, enjoy it. Maybe not enjoy it, but act like you do. There's a movie that Debbie and Savannah really like, and they've watched all the different versions of it. I think it's been remade 3 times. It's Sabrina. And in the story, you got this rich guy, and he's got a brother who's kind of a playboy kind, and then there's this girl that's a chauffeur's daughter, and she grows up, she becomes a beautiful woman, and through a turn of events, the really responsible brother, he's kind of stiffed her, he's kind of, not been interested, the other guys, it's just kind of a little bit of an
interesting story that way. At the end, you get down to the end of the story, and the chauffeur's driving Lionel Larrabee to the airport, and he looks in the rearview mirror, and Lionel says to him, he says, "Go ahead and say it." And the girl's dad says, "You don't deserve her." Now, if Lionel Larrabee says, "Wait a minute, I do deserve her," then guess what? He doesn't deserve her, right? Every woman knows the answer to that. I'm helping you guys. And but if he does what he does, what he says, "You're right. I don't deserve her, but I need her and I want her." And with that, her dad says, "Here's where you'll find her." You know, it's that you don't deserve it, and when you realize you don't deserve it, that's when you get it. When you realize you didn't deserve the gospel, that's when you receive the gospel. Here's this humility. Jesus says, "You don't deserve this," and she says, "You're right." But in the back of her mind is this whole idea of, "You're right, I don't deserve it, and I realize I'm not Jewish, but I believe you make exceptions. And I believe you're going to make an exception for me." Listen, I don't know what you're going up against, and I don't know who didn't get what in your whole narrative of your life and your view of God. But I'm telling you this morning, you need to believe God's going to make you the exception. Not because you deserve it, but because he's just an amazing God who does for us what we never deserved. Well, finally, a person with great faith receives answers from God. I'm going to ask musicians to come up. A person with great faith receives answers from God. I'm going to go back to Matthew for just a moment because I want you to see this in verse 28. She says, "Yes, Lord, yet even the dogs eat the crumbs that fall from the master's table." He says, "I know I don't deserve it, but I do know this, that in your illustration, even the dogs get crumbs. And you're so big and you're so powerful and you're so great that even though my need is humanly pretty big, it's like a crumb on the table to you. It's something you can do very easily and it's something you will do." Jesus looks at her and he said, "Woman, you, great is your faith. Be it done for you as you desire." And her daughter was healed instantly. Woman, you have great faith. You have mega faith, would be a way to understand that. Now back to Mark's gospel. And he said to her, "For this statement, you may go your way." Can I ask you what kind of statements you're making about your situation and about God relative to your situation? What are you saying? What are you saying? How are you talking about it? How are you dealing with it verbally? I mean, I read this and it reminds me, and I'll move quickly here, but just when we were getting ready to build the West Campus, it was during the economic downturn and things were looking really bleak and we were thinking of pulling the plug. In fact, I went home from church ready to pull the plug. Calling a few people, it's the fall, talking to them. Debbie's listening to the call, she's not saying much. We go for a Jeep ride, tops down, beautiful afternoon. I take a wrong turn, it's a dead end. I'm gonna back up. She puts her hand on my arm and she says, "I have a word from the Lord for you." And like a faith-filled husband, I'm like, "How do you know?" She said, "Because as we were driving down the road, I felt like God spoke to my heart, and I said, 'John, how will I know this is from you?'" And she said, "If it's from you, cause him to to take a dead intern. And I did. She said, so this is from you, so listen. And it was about God going to provide for us in the greatest recession since the Great Depression, the money we'd need to do that. And then she looked at me like every husband needs his wife to do now and then. And she said, John, look at me. If you can't speak words of faith, then don't speak at all. You know what? Some of you are hurting yourself by the way you talk about your situation. I'm just trying to put you under some kind of bondage. Like, don't speak words of faith. I'm just saying, get a hold of yourself. Let's believe God. Either you believe he's a God who does miracles and he's going to work a miracle in your situation, or you don't. Let's cut to the chase. Either you're in or you're out. There's no middle ground. Jesus looks at this woman, and this woman, Jesus says, it's not right to give the children's bread to the dogs. And she says, you know what? You're right on that, except you and I both know crumbs fall off the table and the dogs get them. In other words, what she's saying is, Jesus, I believe just a little crumb from you is more than enough to meet my need. I believe you're that powerful. And Jesus said, as he looked at her for this statement, you may go your way, because you talked in faith. Because you talked in faith, because you believed me to do the impossible. You may go your way. The demon has left your daughter. Can you imagine her joy when she went home and she found the child lying on the bed and the demon gone? Great faith brought about a great miracle.